Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Are you tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card?
Well, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime.
So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve.
Limitations apply.
See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about reality dating shows like The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Welcome to Love to See It, a podcast about processing our grief, confusion, betrayal at the end of Gary and Teresa's short-lived golden marriage.
And also ruminating on F-Girl Island's bizarre rebrand.
We'll also be briefly revisiting this week's Farmer Wants a Wife episode, or as briefly as we can, because I actually somehow have a lot of thoughts about this week's episode. And then we'll wrap up this episode with teaser time, what's coming up that we're excited to watch in the next week or two. And we'll each give out our final rose of the week.
Also, stay tuned. Later this week, we have another Love 101 episode, this time Bennifer edition. And for those of us that experienced 2003 in real time, This is going to be a good one. Let's get into some news and gossip. I feel like we just have to get right into it. Gary and Teresa announced their plans to divorce on GMA on Friday. They appeared in a pre-taped sit-down interview on GMA with Juju Chang, and they announced that they had, quote, had a number of heart-to-heart conversations. We've looked closely at our situation, our living situation, and we've come to the conclusion mutually that it's probably time for us to dissolve our marriage. They also insist that they are still in love and best friends.
They held hands for like the entire interview as if they were still together. She's still been wearing her rings, although they said they would have to give the rings back. They've still been wearing them. It was very casual and like weird, I would say.
Also, this is coming on the heels of them all going with their kids to film Celebrity Family Feud.
And it seems like they must have known. Like, you can't tell
me. That's what I mean.
That they didn't know then that this was coming.
No. Gary has since said that they were talking about divorce for a few weeks. So, you know.
I mean, that timeline also seems wild to me. A few weeks. Okay. Sounds like you really tried everything you possibly could.
The whole thing is confusing. And I went through such a series of emotions.
Same.
Because I'm really bummed. You know, like, I think the two of us are very hopeful about love people. We know most couples in this world are going to break up, but I always feel really icky, like actively betting against any of the couples that come out of this show. I feel like there's already enough stacked against them. I always want to like send the good vibes.
Yeah. I don't like to try to make myself feel smart by guessing who's going to break up.
Right.
because it just feels like a cheap way to make myself feel like savvy or something. I never really know who's going to break up. I know a lot of them will. But I actually didn't think this was a divorce announcement. Like when people started sending around the teaser for the interview, I was like, they look like really cozy in the clip, like with each other. Why would they go on GMA to announce that they're getting divorced? Like they're both elderly. Like maybe one of them has a health problem that they're wanting to raise awareness about. And I was wrong. And I guess I'm happy that they're both still in good health. So that was my first reaction. I was like, good. Everyone is healthy. Secondly, so sad that they're already getting divorced. And then I started to feel a little bit like suspicious. I was like, that's so fast. How can they have really invested in this marriage at all?
Or how did they just think so little through? Because their party line is kind of that logistics were the main impediment to the marriage, that they explored moving to South Carolina. They explored Gary moving to New Jersey, but ultimately neither of them wanted to be away from their kids and their grandkids, which is definitely something that we talked about when Gary had his final few choices, right? Like we talked about the distance being a possible impediment to being with Teresa and also with Faith.
Yeah, I remember that actually coming up in the sense of people speculating, oh, that's probably why he said goodbye to Faith. She's too attached to where she lives. Right. But then we were like, well, why wouldn't Teresa, for example, who is so involved in her kids' lives, be attached to where she lives? But presumably they've talked about it. And apparently they had not actually resolved anything. There was, like, I remember them talking about Charleston and essentially saying, like, well, this was a problem. And then it turns out that, you know, she has, I think, one of her kids
is in Charleston.
Yeah, lives near Charleston. And he was like, all of a sudden, it's like there's a big problem that is gone. The issue of compromising on where to live and how to reconcile families and all of that, it's no longer an issue. That was a conversation that they had had with People magazine. Like, oh, we figured it out. It's not a problem anymore. And apparently they didn't figure it out, and it was very much a problem.
It just obviously makes you wonder if there is something more going on, which I'm sure there usually are multiple reasons that people end up splitting. And I also have to respect that we're not entitled to have all the information.
No.
But it definitely feels frustrating narratively.
Yeah, and I think there is, for me, and I think for a lot of people, more frustration and desire and nosiness because we just watched them get married on TV for presumably a big payday for them and for ABC. And it doesn't really feel like they took that marriage seriously. And it's one thing to feel like, oh, they get rushed up to the finale and they have to pick someone. Why not pick someone? And they do, and it doesn't work out. That actually doesn't necessarily make me feel like they didn't take it seriously, the process. Relationships don't work out. But to like jump into a marriage when you haven't figured out where you're going to live together and you're not even that committed to making it work on that front, then I'm like, well, why did you get married then? What was the purpose of that? Was it related to that big TV wedding?
Yeah, I think that is the question that has come up for me as I have thought about it more. Like, I think at first my overwhelming thing was just like, I'm sad for them. And maybe it was really logistics and that sucks. That seems really hard. They probably should have thought this through. Weird that they didn't, but
yeah.
And then, yeah, you think a little more and you do wonder what was behind this big splashy TV wedding. And then also, I reach a point where I'm like, well, if it was for PR reasons, then why wouldn't they wait longer to break up? Like, they don't have to live in the same place. So I really honestly don't know what to make of it. And I don't feel like I have any insider insights, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does seem odd that they would just so quickly come out with it. And they're like, oh, we don't want to lie to anyone. We didn't want to pretend once it was over. Maybe that's the case. Maybe it was just all just them getting caught up in the moment and they just rushed into things. I think there was probably a bit of a combination of factors where,
for sure,
they were highly motivated to overlook any issues and to just enjoy what was being offered to them and to say like, oh, well, they want to have a big wedding for us. We're going to get to, you know, redo all the wedding stuff. We're going to get to, Teresa finally gets to throw a big wedding and have a big fancy dress. She never got to do that with Billy. Like, she was very excited, I remember, to finally get to do all those things. And we get to do Amazon SpawnCon and flog our like ice cream milkshake maker that we're going to register for on Amazon. Why would we look too closely at any issues that might like stop this train from going? And I think that's the most likely thing, is there's like implicit pressure from the network. There's like also the pressure of like giving up that money and those sponsorships. And then there's also just optimism, like wanting to believe that it will all work out. And so why not just grab this moment for everything it's worth? But it is like, then you have to deal with the fact that then afterwards people are going to feel perhaps like they were kind of used for, or taken for a fool, I guess. Like, you're going to sell us Amazon plate sets and milkshake makers, and you're going to have us watch this whole live wedding special that was, it doesn't feel real anymore. And right. So that's the trade-off that they made, and now it's kind of coming back to bite them.
Susan Knowles and Kathy Swartz are, frankly, our real winners of the Golden Bachelor season, in a way. They have both been responding to comments about this, and they did an Instagram Live. And Kathy said, you know, my heart is broken for them. It is sad. It is tragic. Please, people, be kind. These are our friends. The love didn't work out, but they're great people, and our hearts are breaking from them. And Susan was like, still believe in this franchise. She said, you know, don't give up on the idea of meeting somebody on a show like that. There are so many people out there that are still in love, and I truly believe those two fell in love.
Don't give up on finding love on a show The Bachelor. Like this. Yeah. Can still work but out.
They
still
also
watch
were...
The Golden Bachelorette, please.
Honestly, I agree.
I will, yeah.
We should all watch The Golden Bachelorette. I also, frankly, I need that to happen, like, immediately so I can, like, memory hole all of this.
I know. The Golden Bachelor, like, reached such a high height and then, like, such a low. It's taken us on such a roller coaster.
Although, you know what? Even by the end, I was like, the best thing to come out of this are these women and their friendships with each other and the fact that
Absolutely.
They have a platform. So I'm happy that all of that continues. But yeah, Kathy and Susan are very adamant that like this was about their families. This was about the fact that neither of them could move away from their families. And right after this announcement, Gary like immediately filed the paperwork for divorce in Indiana, citing irretrievable breakdown, which is like no fault divorce. And they did have a prenup, which I think everyone was quite relieved about.
And they recommend it, which, like, yeah, they needed it.
Yeah.
So I mean, clearly, why wouldn't you recommend
wise.
It? I just in this moment realized that they have the same like geographical distance that I have with my family. Like, Gary's in Indiana, like my dad. And,
oh, yeah. And you're in Jersey.
And I'm in Jersey. It is a long distance. It's not an easy distance. And it's a long way to be from your grandkids also. And South Carolina isn't exactly close to either of those places. So it does seem like it would be tough to make that work. But also, I guess I'm just biased because I don't live that close to my family. I just feel like it surprised me that everyone was like, well, obviously they're never going to move. They're too advanced in age. They aren't going to be away from their kids. And I'm like, I feel like I know lots of grandparents who don't live near their kids and they visit.
Yeah.
And if this is really their chance for love, like maybe they would prioritize that a little bit. I don't know.
I also feel like some people were pointing out, which I agree with, that like there are plenty of couples who get together later in life that just have a more unconventional arrangement, you know?
Yeah.
Like they might just be long distance for certain amounts of time. And like, why was that not an option? It's almost like you want to ask follow-up questions. that you feel like didn't get answered.
Yeah, like were there other issues that they don't want to talk about? As you said, it's not really likely that we'll ever know. It's not necessarily our business, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. If my parents did live right down the street from us and they suddenly were like, we're moving away and we're never watching the kids again, I guess that would be tough. It'd be tough on the family and dynamic.
We did see Teresa's daughter basically beg Gary, do not take her away from me during their hometown.
Then what about his grandkids? Yeah, no, it's tough. This news just really brought me through just a plethora of emotions and thoughts. I'm still sorting through.
TMZ also reported that Teresa's job was a factor in the split. They wrote, quote, sources with direct knowledge tell TMZ, since Teresa has an established career as a compliance officer in New Jersey, she grappled with the idea of leaving her job behind to move to Indiana or South Carolina with Gary, and that Gary had wanted to be kind of like 3 months here, 3 months there, but because of Teresa's job, it wasn't going to work, and she wasn't ready to stop working.
Okay. I mean, she is 70. I was a little surprised by the idea that at 70, you would be really wanting to, like, for the indefinite future, continue working as a compliance officer instead of retiring and traveling with your hot Hoosier husband.
No, I was Gary. Like, go to Italy, leave your grandchildren and your job.
You can come back and visit your grandchildren. The job will be fine without you, you know. I mean, if she wants to keep working, you know, for the foreseeable future, then I guess fair enough.
At both the distance and the job are things that came up when Gary and Teresa were on the Dear Shandy podcast doing a love fest,
oh my God,
which was only a few weeks ago.
Oh boy.
Which a lot of people have pointed out. And
what did they say?
They were very open about the fact that they had these challenges. They said, we've been going through, you know, some challenges. The distance has been really challenging. Teresa's like, Gary really wants me to stop working. We're sorting through that. And of course, I'm so not cynical that I was like, yeah, they're having their issues. I love how honest they're being, like really rooting for them. And then, of course, whenever a couple is like too publicly honest about their issues, they always seem to break up.
Turns out they're actually maybe soft launching their divorce.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was like, why did they do this love fest? It just had a lot of questions about the actual timeline of this. And
there's something about the breakup that I think is like, partly what's maybe triggering people is that it's being done with the same sort of like almost naive positivity. And like, it just like was a single moment of thought put into this. Like when Gary like happily walked himself into being too nice to like three women at the end of the season, like, cause he wasn't looking around and paying attention to anything. It feels a little bit like that. You're like, they're both just being like, chirp, chirp. We love each other. Everything is great. And like, love at this phase of life is so wonderful. And sure, we have our challenges and whoops, we're getting divorced. What do you know? We still are in love. Where you're just like, guys, wake up. What's happening? Like, pay attention to everything. It's like, it makes the sunniness of it, I think, seem a little like it arises from willful ignorance.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's a really good way to put it. You also listened to the entirety of the Almost Famous podcast episode about this. I only watched some clips, but Ashley I, from what I saw, came in real hot.
Oh yeah.
With her opinions.
She was like, I can finally tell everyone that when I was at the Golden Wedding, I felt nothing. I wasn't choked up at all. And maybe she knows, you know, maybe she could sense the aura. I'm also sort of like, it is weird that you were there because you don't know them.
They're not
like,
your
that's
friends.
Kind of the thing about the Golden Wedding that was weird is that most of the people who were there don't know them at all. They're just Bachelor Nation personalities like Ashley, who has no real connection to them. So why would you feel that much, I guess?
Yeah, also, frankly, there have been weddings that I have not been like moved to tears at that doesn't necessarily say anything about the quality of the marriage.
All of those people that I have felt that way at their weddings, they're all still married. So,
exactly.
You know, what do I know? But she definitely on the podcast expressed that she was pretty suspicious about the unspoken reasons behind the divorce, that maybe it had something to do with like that profile or takedown of Gary that came out, going into some of his past post-widowhood relationships and his professional history. You know, did Teresa find out some things about him, or were there some tendencies that he has that were sort of hinted at in that article, like, you know, sort of love bombing, committing heavily very early and then backing away? Did that contribute? Was it the money that really motivated them to move forward with the marriage at this stage? They also had Trista and Bob Guinea on to discuss. And yeah, Trista talked about like how much money they made from getting married on TV.
How much money she made?
She and Ryan made.
What were the numbers like?
I think like $1 million. That's what she said. And she said she doesn't think that ABC happily gives up that much money. Like it might not have been that much, but
I would imagine the rate has gone down. Honestly.
Probably. Yeah. But you know, that is, they waited longer. They got married like a year after they got engaged, and she and Bob both talked about like how much you get to know each other in that period after you're able to be public, you know, after the finale airs. And you're actually able to be together in public, and how Gary and Teresa had very little of that before they got married.
And I think we were all sort of like, wow. This seems fast, but also guess they've really been digging into these conversations while the show's airing. You know, I sort of assumed they're not dummies. They're not going to just do this if they don't really want to. And
you should never assume that about people who go on this show. They're all dummies and they don't know what they want.
And everyone has the ability to make a reckless or ill-advised decision when there are a lot of incentives and a lot of good energy behind it. And a lot of like people outside of the two of you who like want it. Like I do understand that.
Yeah. Well, maybe there'll be more that comes forward in the coming months. We'll see. I'm curious if either of them will end up doing like a solo media tour at all.
I am curious too, because right now they seem very aligned, very amicable, very respectful of each other. So I could see that just kind of continuing.
Yeah.
We'll see.
On that note, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll have just a few quick gossip items to cover, and then we will get all the way into the Lovers and Liars premiere. Can you keep up? I like love it. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
I mean, there are 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for just $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
Yes, like my new boho globe earrings, which I am obsessed with.
Ooh.
And the best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings directly to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, which I love.
I personally have really been in my Canadian tuxedo era. I'm wearing a lot of denim. It feels very spring. And I have been looking for a lightweight, tuckable chambray shirt. And Quince had me covered. Their distressed denim shirt, I got it in blue, and it is so classic. It will never go out of style. It feels like a really nice weight. I love Quince.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quince.com/LTSI. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
And you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week.
Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Just heat and savor the good stuff.
Plus, you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. And you can pause or reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
They're celebrating Earth Day all month long at Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Especially since I've been back from my travels, I've gotten really out of practice with my normal meal prep. And so Factor has been really helping me kind of bridge that gap, know that I have healthy, whole meals in my fridge ready to eat when I need them.
Head to factormeals.com/LTSI50 and use code LTSI50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code LTSI50 at factormeals.com/LTSI50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a while, or even not that long, knows that we love Article. I mean, honestly, I'm looking around my home right now. Coffee tables from Article. That lovely chair out on my deck, Article. Our big console, Article. My bed frame, Article. This is an Article household.
It is. And it was an inspiration to me. We finally got our first Article piece of furniture recently, our new couch. And my husband and I are both constantly just like, how did we live before this couch? This is such an improvement over what we had before. It's so comfortable. It just seems to get more comfortable every day. I mean, it's the couch you dream of.
And the reason that we have both been able to find ideal furniture on Article is because Article believes in delightful design for every home.
And thanks to their online-only model, they have some really delightful prices, too.
Their curated assortment of mid-century modern, coastal, industrial, Scandi, and boho designs makes furniture shopping simple.
And their team of designers are all about finding that perfect balance between style, quality, and price, because we all want the best of all of those three things united in one piece of furniture, right?
Plus, they're dedicated to thoughtful craftsmanship that stands the test of time and, you know, looks good doing it.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
To claim, visit article.com/LTSI, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout.
That's article.com/LTSI for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
And we are back. Some quick news items before we get into Lovers and Liars, formerly known as F-Girl Island. I'm very excited to discuss it.
Yes.
But some news items. First, Jason Tardik and TikToker Kat Stickler appear to be dating. This has been brewing for a while. They have been kind of teasing this relationship subtly on social media. And then very recently, Kat posted a video and Jason was visible behind her, like sitting at a table with her. Mm-hmm. So people are like, feels like this is happening.
Feels like the soft launch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had like missed that this was happening until I saw that she had posted him in this video. I'm happy for Jason. He's always seemed like a good dude, and being in a big public breakup sucks, and I'm glad that he's moving on and finding happiness with another outspoken woman with a public platform.
So, so true. He has a type.
He really does, and we love that. Next, Malina Nasab from Clayton's season of The Bachelor is engaged to her partner Matt Keefe.
Mazel to them.
Yes. Also, randomly, like this made me, I had to go back in the Bachelor archives a little bit for this couple.
Yeah, this is like wild to me.
Angela from Nick Vile's season, Angela Amesqua, I think, is dating Kifton Locke, who was on Jillian's season and was in a long relationship with Tenley Molzon. They were sort of rumored to be together during the filming of Bachelor Pad 1, but they sort of were playing coy about it. They ended up being together for like 5 years, I think.
Yeah, after. I remember being very into Tenley and Kipton.
They are...
at the time, but I had forgotten he existed. But then you like said the name, and I exactly. was like, oh, of course.
I love when something like this happens, and I'm like, oh, I guess I just assumed that he married someone else a long time ago. And
yeah.
No, he is still out there dating the Bachelor Nation ladies. And remember, Angela had a relationship with Clay Harbor after they met on Paradise. That's the last time I really heard from her. Angela and Kipton are dating. So... what do you know?
Totally different Bachelor Nation generations here.
Yeah, they're it's a generation, it's an age gap, age and Bachelor Nation gap relationship. Presumably also an age gap relationship of some kind. I don't actually know how old they both are, but he was like a solid seven years before her on the Bachelor
she's
train.
She's 34 and he's 46.
Age gap relationship in Bachelor terms and in real terms, but it's we wish them the best.
We really do.
Shanae Ankeny from Clayton's season had her baby, Maven, with her boyfriend, Nate Ebner, who's an NFL player, and a very, very cute, adorable little baby girl. Aww. Congrats to them.
Congrats, Shanae. Also, glad to see that the Bachelor and NFL relationship is going strong.
Always.
Yeah, the brands are just one, basically.
Yeah. She went on the show to date a former aspiring NFL player and then left to date a different NFL player.
She leveled up.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah. All right. Should we get into Lovers and Liars?
Yes. Yes. Anyone who has been listening to this show probably knows that Claire and I are big fans of the F-Boy Island cinematic universe. We find Elan Gale to be a very fun and creative person in the reality dating space. He's, you know, cut his teeth as an EP on The Bachelor. And so it's been really interesting to watch the way that all of the shows he started since have kind of felt like they're in conversation or like course correcting for something that The Bachelor maybe didn't do as well or like wasn't tapping into. So we've been promised for quite a while, I think, a gender swapped version of F-Boy Island.
Yeah. People kept telling
us always
it was
his
coming.
Intention.
We were like, please give us F-Girl Island. And we heard that they had gotten the go-ahead for F-Girl Island. They heard of
from the CW
that it was being made. The CW, which is now the network that makes F-Boy Island after it was dropped by Max. So the CW ordered F-Girl Island. They started making it, and then suddenly it popped up under the name Lovers and Liars.
I was so confused. I got a press screener that was like, obviously, you'll be thrilled to watch episode one of Lovers and Liars. And then I was like, oh, weird. This sounds like F-Girl Island, but I don't know what's going on. Then I press play and it's like Nikki Glaser and they are literally saying F-Girl and F-Girl Island multiple times in the premiere.
Yeah, at one point in the premiere, Nikki Glaser is like, here you all are, the first ever cast of F-Girl Island. And I'm like, you couldn't find another thing to have in this? You couldn't cut that out in
yeah,
post?
I was very shocked that they didn't cut that out because they did change a couple other things between the screener.
Yeah, I think they did one
and the final
one
cut.
Round of reshoots where they just had Nikki Glaser say, instead of welcome to F-Girl Island, they have her say welcome to Lovers and
to
Liars.
Lovers and Liars.
But all the other instances are unchanged.
Yeah, and also, I mean, Elan on social media has been still saying F-Girl Island. Like, I don't think they're trying. They're like, this was rebranded for whatever reason. I assume a network note or something. But they're not trying that hard. They want you to know still. The creators of the show want you to know, like, this is the F-Boy Island cinematic universe.
Right.
This is the sister show to F-Boy Island.
It's just weird because, like, it's such a generic name. Like, even when you Google it, like, a K-drama comes up.
I know. I kept trying to look up information about it and being like, not the K-drama.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the show.
I wonder if they were either trying to, if they're either trying to move away from the F blank island formula because it feels too profane for a network like the CW, or because it's not performing well enough and they want to rebrand to maybe juice it in some other way. They're like, this brand recognition is worth nothing. Or were they like, F boys are a thing, but F girls aren't, so people aren't going to get it. We should use a formulation that sounds like it's actually about women. Like, some of them are lovers and some of them are liars. I don't know, but
I have so many questions. I'm going to still be thinking about it in my own head as F Girl Island. I'm sorry to the CW.
F Girl Island is headcanon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. But yeah, Lovers and Liars is just F Boy Island with the genders swapped. We have three himbos looking for love and trying to sort through a bunch of wily potential F girls and maybe find the one. It's the same setup with $100,000 being on the line. If they choose a nice girl at the end, they split the money. If they choose an F girl, the F girl can take the money.
Yeah.
It's hosted by Nikki Glaser. Like, all the beats are pretty much the same.
They do some of the same gags, like Nikki Glaser whips out the conch shell to blow to summon all of the F girls and nice girls to meet the leads, which is exactly what she does with the F boys and the nice boys. So yeah, it's all there if you're an F Boy Island fan.
Which we are.
So the three men at the center, this is something that is new. They've never been able to do back and forth, like casting known players, because there's never been an opposite gender cast before. So they draw all of their leads from previous seasons of F Boy Island. We have Casey Johnson, who is one of our faves from the FYI
Baby
with history.
Baby-faced assassin.
He's 26. When they said he was 26, I was like, oh my God, I forgot he was so young.
Claire, this was my reaction. I was like, how is he only 26? Like, how young was he when he first went on this show?
I know. I didn't think of him as being that young.
Also, I feel like all the women that he was involved with were in their 30s.
Were older. I think that's probably why.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like he was so much younger than the women he was dating, who are a little bit older. He was the runner-up on F Boy Island season 1 and season 2. During season 1, he was an F boy. During season 2, he was a self-proclaimed nice guy. But he was the one who got left in the dust at the finale because he was involved with Tamaris, who kept the money for herself and said,
our original F girl.
I came here as an F girl, kept the money. An icon.
Icon. We love Tamaris.
We also have Benedict Polizzi, 32, who was the runner-up on F Boy Island season 2 and season 3. He was a nice guy during his first run and an F boy during season 3. So he's like the inverse Casey. Like, Casey came on as an F-boy and was changed, like, or, you know, this is the narrative. He's changed. His heart was open because he actually really likes CJ. And then he came back ready for a relationship and really fell for Tamaris. Benedict was a nice guy who got, you know, rejected by Louise for Mercedes, an all-time F-boy all-star. Oh,
probably the most successful F-boy Island player of all time.
He then was like curdled and came back as an F boy to like, cause like, I guess nice guys always finish last. Like, I'm an F boy now. And then he got rejected again for a nice guy this time.
By Katie Thurston. Which is important on this podcast to note.
Important context.
Katie Thurston famously not into F boys at all.
No, it was over for him as soon as he revealed that he was an F boy. We also have CJ Weathers, who is 24. He was the second runner up on F Boy Island season 3, and he was an F boy. But he says that he was dating Daniela, who rejected her F boys and kept the nice guy at the end. They were all very wise this past season. And he says that because he really connected with Daniela and fell for her, he changed and now he is ready for a real relationship. They're all just like, we're ready for a boo. We're ready to be reformed. We're ready to not have, you know, half the money taken by a woman anymore or something. They're like, we're ready to not lose out on the 100K and also find love. I was like, I'm not really so totally sold that you guys are here looking for the for purest love. Of motives.
Something that's interesting about F Girl Island versus F Boy Island is that there's a lot more overt talk about the money in a way that doesn't feel as gross and cringe as it does when the genders are reversed.
Well, I wanted to talk about this because I think it really changes things, not just to have them be men, but to have men who have all been F-boys on the show.
Yes. Yes. And I feel like that was by design, where they're kind of like, you know, these guys know the drill. They are in on the joke. They love this franchise. You know, two out of three have been through multiple seasons.
Yeah.
And have a really good kind of like sense of humor about it.
I think it also like stacks the deck in favor of us sympathizing with the women.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I'm just like, well, what like, right do they have fine. To be upset? Like, they were F-boys. Like, they think they're above manipulating a woman for money? Obviously not. So when they get, you know, shredded in the confessionals by their F-girls, I'm just like,
whatever.
Seems fair. Seems fine to me. If they had just picked like a Vince type, you would feel bad.
You just feel sad.
Like you do on F-Boy Island.
Exactly. And I feel like they selected these three because they were like, you guys can take it. You're going to have fun with it.
There is like, they're playing to a female audience, right?
Yes.
They don't want the women to feel guilty or bad about the men being humbled or manipulated.
Right. Whereas, and that's in that way, it's a very different tone than
Boy
Island.
We were curious how they were going to manage this because there are, you know, misogynistic stereotypes about women being deceitful and manipulative and just using men for money. And we were like, F-Boy Island, in a sense, kind of like inverted that old trope. But how are they going to do F-Girl Island without playing into them? And it seems like they have done some really effective tweaks so far for me. Like, they found a framing that felt like it was suitable for the feminist-minded, progressive woman who might be watching this show.
Nikki Glaser introduces the new show like this. She says, for far too long, dating shows have revolved around desperate women in search of the one true thing that will give their life purpose, a husband. But not every woman is in search of that. Some women just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
So she's like, in a way, it's the feminist choice to play these men. And you're like, okay, great. So I don't have to feel bad for them. This is funny.
Yeah.
Cool. Glad we understand.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not going to be like, oh, these evil, like some of these women are sweet wifey material and some of these women are like evil seductresses. It's like, no, these are some smart, forward-thinking women who
they're investing in themselves.
Are investing in themselves. And they don't need to build their lives around a man in order to have value. And we love that for them, actually. So let's cheer them on as they try to deceive these three men. So they found that framing that felt a little bit different from, you know, from the way that you might see like a gold digger being framed. That feels a little bit more neutral. Towards the women. And I appreciated that. I also think that like the F-boy stereotype is, I mean, it's a more recent thing, right? Like, and that is initially what the show was playing into. It's like, you have to be careful out there with these men who just want to basically sleep with you and then ghost you. And they made that into a game with money. That's not as much of a stereotype with women still, that they're just going to sleep with you and then discard you because they didn't get emotionally involved. And right. So there is an element of this that they're playing with that's like, they just don't, they're not going to catch feelings.
Yeah, they're inured to that. In a way, it has some of the narrative satisfaction of like an extended revenge plot.
Yeah.
The thing that always works for me about the F-Boy Island cinematic universe is that the stakes always feel not too high. You're like, no one's gonna really get harmed during the making of this show. And that's what makes it okay to watch kind of this like manipulation and a little bit of like meanness, because it ultimately feels funny.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking earlier about like how many couples break up in Bachelor Nation, but a lot of them don't break up, right? Like, it's a pretty decent success rate considering that it's people meeting on a reality show. How many couples have come out of F-Boy Island?
Zero.
Zero. Zero. And like, in the sense that like, it maybe one or two of the couples dated briefly after. Like, not no one even like was in a serious relationship for long after being on the show. So it does feel like the stakes here are really just about playing games with each other while you're on the island. It doesn't really feel like anyone, like Benedict will be like, oh yeah, I'm fine, I'm here looking for my boo. And Casey's like, oh, I want to settle down, I live in the suburbs now. But like, come on. Like no okay, one Casey. Believes that you came here for that.
Zero.
You would never come here for that. They don't believe also, it.
No, no.
They don't think that we really believe it either. They're like,
and it doesn't matter.
Believe me. I know you don't, but believe me, I want a girlfriend. Okay.
And that, as you said, it's so true. It stacks the deck in favor of us sympathizing with the women and being like, let's see where this game lands. Let's see how savvy all of these potential F people really are.
Yeah. And I think I enjoy this more. I'm thinking back to like old school, really shallow dating shows, you know, that didn't try to make it about finding a serious connection, but that were more like game show, you know, in origin, like Next or, you know, Blind Date, like these sort of goofy dating shows.
Those never did it for me.
Those were always sort of mean-spirited. And, you know, it involved a lot of just like judging people quickly by their appearances as like not attractive enough or attractive enough. Like it was all based on like these like kind of nasty superficial judgments. This feels more like a sport to me.
Yes. Yeah. There's something about the Elon Gale sensibility that I think lightens the mood in a way that allows it to be like, you're playing a game. There's money on the line. Everyone here is like a very hot person who could easily date or sleep with someone outside of this show, right? Like, there's no illusions.
Yeah, no one's that, like, this is my last chance to find love.
No, it's not earnest. And yet, I think not only is it not mean-spirited in the way that, like, a Next or a Blind Date would be, but it also gives us that narrative connection that we get from shows like The Bachelor, where we grow attached to characters. Like, I got so excited to see, you know, Benedict and Casey and CJ, like, back on our screens. I'm like, oh, I know these guys. This is hilarious. Like, I want to see these himbos, like, try to sort through. And the cheeky tone really carries over in so many ways. Another thing that I thought was kind of like a little course correction in the tone to correct for any like weird gold diggery stereotypes is the fact that whereas the women leads are always presented as like sharp, savvy, accomplished, extremely able to deduce F-boys from nice guys, but just like drawn to an F-boy sometimes. These guys are like, they don't know what the fuck is going on. They're true himbos.
They're hapless.
Everyone that they are like most certain is a nice girl is like, we already know, is an F girl.
Yeah, which is something that they always do in every season, right? They show like the guy that one of the women's really into, and then it's like, ding, he's an F boy. But that is kind of, you know, framed in this season through just sort of constant mockery of the men's poor judgment that creates a different context.
It's a different
for
tone.
It. As the men meet the women, They play this red flag, green flag game that they also played on F-Boy Island. Each woman comes forward and does her little intro to them with a little pickup line or gimmick. And then each man decides whether she's a red flag or a green flag. Red flag meaning they think she's an F girl. Green flag, she's a nice girl. And if a woman gets all three green flags, she gets extra time that night before the whole mixer. And we see a lot of the women just mocking them in confessionals for being idiots and like not being able to clock the F girls, having no strategy.
And they literally don't seem to even remember what the green flags and red flags mean.
At one point, CJ gives someone a green flag and who seemed really like giving F girl vibes. And Nikki's like, why did you give her the green flag? And he's like, oh, she seems like sexy. I want to get to know her better. She's like, did you forget what the red flag and the green flag represent? And he's like, oh, yeah, I think I did a little bit. He didn't remember.
She's like, you are supposed to be discerning between a nice girl and an F girl. And he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, right. Oh, they just get flustered. Like, they see a woman who seems super hot or, like, fun, and they're like, green flag, I want to spend more time with her. And Nikki's like, this isn't working because you don't remember the rules. Like, you need to be paying attention.
And all of the women are like, we can't tell if they have any criteria. It seems really wild, the decisions that they're making.
Casey gives a red flag to Camille, who has, like, a blunt platinum blonde bob that's combed straight back. He's like, that combed back hair, that's my favorite hairstyle. I like, it's my kryptonite, and like, I'm always drawn to F girl, so I just feel like that's an F girl hairstyle. And I was like, well, you know, say what you will, at least it's a criterion, you know?
Yeah, you know what, I respected that he at least was like, I know the rules and I'm gonna make a judgment call.
Yeah. Whereas, like, on F-Boy Island, I feel like the women were doing a lot more, like, oh, he's rubbing his hands together in that way that F-Boys always do. Or, like,
yeah, they're like, oh, he's a club promoter. We all know that is, like, an F-Boy profession.
Yeah.
Like, stand-up comedian, you should be wary.
Yeah, the men are just like, I don't know. She made me feel something, and that was makes me afraid. Ah, red flag.
It's so funny.
And then at the end of the episode, when the F girls reveal themselves and they just like rip on the dudes for not being that great and not worth their attention, it's very much played for laughs. Like, everyone on set is like laughing.
Everyone's cracking up. Like, the guys, like Benedict and Casey especially, are just like dying. They're kind of like, you can tell they're kind of like, respect, like, this is hilarious.
Yeah, and on FY Island, when the men do that, when they leave, when they're just like, yeah, I'm not attracted to any of you, and you're all like kind of dull, boring women, everyone's like shocked. Like, it how feels dare like, you?
Yeah, like outright misogyny. This is disrespect. And with the genders swapped, it's just like funny.
Yeah, I found that kind of interesting. I just feel like for men, there can be a sense, I think fairly, that it's like bad form to be upset by a woman like ripping on you. Like, what right do you have to be mad that she's making fun of you, like, in this world where you have so much more social power?
Yeah, I just feel like the power differential and the gender inequality that still exists just inherently makes things play differently. And that's not to say like men can't be hurt by women. They obviously can be. And they've teased some drama even on this show that, like, are these guys going to catch feelings and then get disappointed, hurt, angry, whatever. But I think especially this early, it's like a man ripping on a woman's looks, for example, and being like, you're not as hot as like the other women that like I would have sex with back home. Like, women exist in a world where our value is being constantly evaluated based on the male gaze, based on whether we are like deemed fuckable. Mm-hmm. We reach a certain age and we're kind of told to go away. Like, men just don't exist in that paradigm.
Right. And so I think part of what felt like I laughed, to be clear.
I did too.
But I also was like, it's funny. Like, it feels like we're laughing because it's like we're laughing at like a dog, you know, doing tricks or something. It's like, this isn't what women do. Like, women don't go up to men and say, like, you're not hot enough to make my roster, because they're not empowered to treat men that way. And that made me a little bit, I was almost like, we can laugh at this because this is seen as so unnatural to them. And it's seen as something that they don't actually have the social power to really enact live out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that kind of, I thought about it too much and then I got depressed. But I appreciated that there is that element of this version of the show that we get to have a little bit more fun with, like, with the jabs, because there isn't this, like, constant depressing feeling of men just shredding women back down to size, which is a smaller size than men get to take up. Some specific things that happen at this elimination. Jasmine tells Benedict that his personality was so much duller than she could possibly have expected. And he's, like, laughing. In his confessional, he's like, why do you all hate men? And why are you all taking your hatred of men out on me? You're the lead. Like, you put yourself in this position.
You're the proxy.
She's like, yeah, I have three boyfriends back at home, and they're going to take me on a better vacation than this.
You know, I hope that for her. My favorite was Brianna A., who just literally cannot remember Benedict's name. She's that one in the pink shirt.
That one over there. Yeah. He's like, great. Fantastic.
Nikki's like, do you know his name? And she's like, it starts with a B?
Yeah. Listen, nothing distinct about the name Benedict. How are you supposed to remember that? She also tells CJ that he wouldn't even make her roster back home. And in a confessional, she's like, sorry, CJ, your earring is cringe and you like boring women. And what really got me is that her demeanor still seems so sweet and, like, almost shy. Meanwhile, she's, like, spitting the most absolutely vicious stuff.
I know. I'm like, she's, how, like, did smiling,
they, like, how did they clock CJ. Her? Yeah. But they did a pretty good job. I mean, they got two F girls out of three in the first elimination.
Yeah, I was actually impressed because it didn't seem like they were going to really have a lot of success, and this was a pretty strong start. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, the rest of our thoughts on Lovers and Liars and a little check-in on Farmer Wants a Wife. Can you keep up? I like
love it. Disposable paper towels are bulky, expensive, and this really bugs me, super wasteful.
But now there's these reusable paper towels from Papaya.
I know what you're thinking. Isn't a reusable paper towel basically just like a rag?
But no. These are so much better.
So much better. They're super quick drying, so they don't get that, like, gross, mildewy rag smell. I think we all know what I'm referring to. It's disgusting. And one reusable paper towel from Papaya actually replaces 17 rolls of disposable paper towels.
That is wild. Each sheet has a hole in the corner, and each pack comes with a signature Papaya hook, so you can just hang them around your house for different uses.
I absolutely love this. I have had other reusable paper towels in the past that didn't come with a little hook, and it's just like you have to find a place for it to hang to dry off and be ready for the next use. And it's annoying. It makes it harder to use them. I'm obsessed with the little hook and hole. So convenient. For a deeper clean, you can just pop them in the top rack of the dishwasher, and they're ready to go.
Plus, they come in so many cute designs to choose from to match any home aesthetic.
Yes, which is very important. We love cute aesthetics. I am a big fan of these paper towels. Whenever I have, like, a kid mess to clean up, which is constantly, I can just grab that right from its hook, wipe it up, and I know that it's not wasting a paper towel. It's going to be dry and ready to use again soon. It really can just, like, do it all.
Go to papayareusables.com and take 30% off site-wide with code LTSI. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all, like, weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So let's talk about some of the ladies on this season.
As always, the stars are the F people.
Yeah.
I feel like that's also 100%. The case on F-Boy Island. It's like the F-Boys that tend to really be our breakouts, our F-Girls. We have some breakout F-Girls.
I love that they are finding for the women the same kind of villain, which is like someone who is really charismatic and funny and able to do the villain role in like a fun, entertaining way.
Yes.
It's like, yes. It's really working for me, the women that they have so far. One of Casey's main connection, Michi, is a known F-girl. And the other...
She's the cutest little bob.
Oh, she's so cute. She is. It's like dyed red.
With her hair. Yeah.
I know. She actually, like, I would probably fall in love with her if I were a man. Same. On F-Boy Island. And I would be like, no, there's no way she's an F-girl. She's so cute and fun and perfect. Also, Jan Danielle, which is quite a name. I've never seen anyone called Jan Danielle before. Double-barreled. She is a festival fashion designer. She specifically designs fashion for festivals.
I feel like if the men were a little savvier, they would understand this as a potential.
Well, this is the thing. This is like a club promoter for women. Like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
They're just like, oh, nice.
They're just
she seems so sweet and gentle.
She said nice things. She was nice and soft-spoken, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she's then when she's with all of the women, she's like, these guys are stupid. They're just not very smart. She says this publicly.
Yeah, she's not hiding it around the women very well.
No.
I mean, her job is to glue like sequins to a thin strip of ribbon to tie around your boobs. So I don't think that she's, you know, quite in the sweet and nice, like, wifey vein that they seem to have pegged her as, because she basically just says hi in a nice way. And they're like, oh, yes.
Like, oh, wow. Nice girl for sure. She's so nice.
And she's connecting with Benedict. And she's like, I don't like Benedict, but he was looking at me. So that's going to work for me because I just want
that
money. She's
like, I want the money. And she says, you know, the funny ones are easy. They're a little goofy looking. They use funny because they have to overcompensate for something else. Am I projecting?
She knows because she's the same. Like, that's fair enough. She's like, yeah,
like
let me
her.
Just gas you up so you think there's something here. So she sits with Benedict and she's just like, you're so funny. I don't
you're
think
so
anyone
funny.
Is funny, but you're funny. And I'm like, Benedict, when someone talks to you like that, you should be like, why don't they want me to think about anything other than how good I feel when I'm around them?
It's honestly a brilliant tactic for a stand-up comedian. Just like feed the ego. Like, tell me another joke.
It's wild to me. As a woman, I don't know how they're missing this. My husband will tell me, you're really funny. And I'll look at him like, what do you want from me? I see what you're doing.
How dare you? You're trying to butter me up.
Yeah. Oh, you want to go to a Rangers game next weekend? Is that what's going on? Don't think I don't see what's happening here. And Benedict is just like, oh, am I funny? Thank you. I love that you think that. Benedict, come on. There are some other notable moments I wanted to get into from these conversations with the women. They make the rounds at this first mixer talking to the ladies. Benedict sits down with one woman and asks her, where are your parents from?
Benedict.
I was like, Benedict
come
no.
on. No.
You don't have to do that. You can just ask her where she's from and she can volunteer whatever information she wants. She's like, oh, I'm Mexican, but I'm from Washington. He's like, cool. I was really asking about your parents, but thanks for that. And then they bond over both of their parents being divorced. They like fist bump.
It's such a contrast to how divorce is played on The Bachelor, obviously, where it's this like thing of like, are we scared to even tell someone? Are they going to judge me for my parents' divorce?
Yeah,
or does it mean I can't ever find love or I can't ever be loved? These people are just like, yeah.
I don't think we've ever seen quite this conversation. Like if they're both parents are both still married, they'll talk about it and be like, heck yeah, children of married for 30 plus years parents over here. Nice. But I've never seen them be like, both divorced. Look at us. You got daddy issues. I have daddy issues.
Yeah. Same origin trauma story. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Casey sits down with Camille, who has the pushback blonde hair that he's afraid of. And he gets so flustered that when she tells him she loves music, he responds, I love you.
Casey.
And then he like can't figure out what to say to like rescue this moment. And she doesn't help him. So he's just like, And after this, she goes back over to the women and is like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't know if I'm really feeling Casey.
It also seems like some tension is brewing between Camille and Michi.
Yeah, because then Michi starts talking about how incredible their chemistry was and how just by like looking at each other that they could get a sense of like what it would be like to like sleep together. And she felt like the sparks. And Camila's like, she is literally so annoying. Like, I can't even hear her voice right now. And I couldn't tell if this was jealousy because she's still into Casey and she's just trying to play it cool, or if it's just a clash of personalities.
Yeah, I think we don't know yet.
Yeah, but if she's still into Casey after that conversation, then her affections are real because that is so awkward. Like the lack of game that Casey was showing in some of these conversations, I was like, what happened to him?
Or I'm like, is this actually just his game to appear like so non-threatening?
But that's the thing that works on FY Island because it makes him seem like maybe he's a nice guy.
But it works less well when you're supposed to be like discerning.
Right. It makes him seem like prey.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to tell potentially an F girl after like a 30 second conversation that you love them and then Casey, you don't know how to rescue the situation.
It's not good. He's lucky. Like he's a target. So cute.
Yeah.
He's, you know, very lucky.
Fatima or Fa. We don't really hear her name spoken, I think, but they show it with like her nickname next to it. On the Chiron, she asks for half of Benedict's gum. And he's like, okay. And he tries to take it out and she like leans over to take it directly from him with her teeth. And shockingly, while doing this, she bites his lip really hard. And he has to ask her to stop kissing him and just talk. He's like, let's just talk now. Ha ha. That was so fun. And she's like, my lips are real. So you're welcome.
You have to admire that confidence because I would be mortified, run away, leave the show. Like,
I mean, did she not notice? Can you not notice that you've just like pincered someone's
the shit out of someone's lip?
I don't know. I mean, I would be mortified as well, but she doesn't miss a beat. And I think he's impressed by her confidence because she's not in his bottom two. That would be bottom two. I'd be like, you bit me and you didn't even feel bad. Like, you're out of here.
You're out.
Also, Casey keeps telling all of the women that their teeth are really nice. And I'm like, that is because they all have veneers.
Yeah, Casey. Come on. He's like, I'm a big teeth guy.
Yeah, I've noticed that all your teeth are exactly the same. They're so white and straight. And they look like they were all put in together at the same time. And they're the same color. And there's not even a slight inconsistency. That's incredible. How did you do that? And also all the other women here. Same thing. Huh. I'm a teeth guy, so I'm impressed by that. Like, Casey, wake up. It's 2024. If you're going on reality TV, all the women are going to have veneers.
They're going to all have veneers. It's just part of the uniform now. Are there any other standout women that you feel like we should watch?
I enjoyed Brianna D, who's like this classic bleach blonde, long hair hottie. She gives like a truly iconic confessional where she's like, I don't need to like fight with the women or be competitive. I'm confident in myself. In my heart, I really just admire myself for the empathy that I have. And also these titties that I bought, that too, maybe.
So good.
I was like, first of all, incredible opener by being like, I admire myself.
My own empathy. I really admire that about me.
I'm always just sitting back and being like, how am I this empathetic? I aspire to be more like me and have the empathy that I have. But yeah, also,
I frankly aspire to be more like Brianna D.
But I also admire these boobs that I bought for myself. I did that. I bought them and
she's
I got them
put on. She's a working woman.
She is.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can take more credit for those in a way than natural ones, you know?
Yeah.
You don't work
You
for
had
those.
Nothing to do with the natural.
Yeah. I think she's got the personality for reality TV. So I'm watching her.
She's very funny.
I think CJ might, I don't know. I have a feeling about him in India. She's this very like tall, stunning
Ooh,
woman with like
stunning.
Big, beautiful, curly afro. And we see him like open up to her about his past as an F boy.
I feel like India is a front runner for CJ, and also Sydney, who's like a tall blonde who works remotely, and they bonded over the fact that their like lifestyles and kind of what they want, how they want to organize their lives fit together well.
Yeah.
And she's like very into him. So,
and CJ is like the hot commodity. A lot of the women are like, obviously, we want to get with the tall, handsome basketball player and not this like 32-year-old comedian. So I think he's been more in the background, just like entertaining lots of women's genuine interest.
Yeah. I also think that CJ is. He's a quieter personality.
Yeah, he's less of the comic presence. He's more, and he's pushing hard. This like, I'm like sincerely reformed. I'm really looking for a lover now, and not like someone to steal money from.
I guess
we'll see.
I guess we'll see. I will definitely keep watching. I continue to be a fan of this franchise and I want to see it succeed.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to know some of the women more and seeing these relationships really unfold as they go on this journey together. Should we check in on Farmer Wants a Wife?
Let's check in on Farmer Wants a Wife. We're really nearing the end of the season. This episode, we get them picking their final solo dates and also doing like a surprise group hometown situation, but all in St. Louis.
Yeah, this was an odd episode. I want to be transparent I skipped some of the episodes. So I'm working with partial context, but it's odd. And it starts out in a very odd place also. It seemed like they start with some unfinished business as they like to do, a little bit of a cliffhanger. And then they get into the bulk of the date, which was this surprise hometown mixer thing.
But we really need to talk about
I
need to talk about Joy, who is the woman that we mentioned in our last conversation about the show that another woman, Reba, kept calling fake and ultimately Joy stayed on. What we didn't really talk about is the fact that Joy had an absolutely awful solo date with Brandon after this. And I have just been waiting for her to be sent home because she said things like, I have no empathy.
Yeah, I went back and watched this after seeing the conversation that we're about to talk about. It was like episode 6 or something. She has a solo date with Brandon and he tells her that his mom abandoned the family when he was young and kind of left his dad and the kids. And that was very difficult. And she just kind of like goes, and like looks at him.
She has literally no response. She can't even muster a like that sounds hard.
He has nothing. To be like, so do you have like a reaction to that at all? And she's like, oh no, I'm pretty, you know, immune to that sort of thing. She's like, my sister and I, we both feel nothing.
And he's like, feel, you have no feelings? Like, I'm concerned. Like, Brandon is our like soft boy farmer. He like cries a lot. We see during this episode that his dad is also a like weepy man. And so you're just like, well, if someone tells you they don't have any feelings, maybe that's not a good person to partner with. Call me crazy.
I mean, it just seems risky. And he's like, I don't know if that's great. And she's like, well, maybe one day I'll have a heart. And she like laughs. And he's like, okay. So I guess they waited a few episodes to directly address this. And at the beginning of this week's episode, he pulls her aside one night and basically is like, let's talk about what happened on that date. And she explains why she said that. She says, she gets like very quickly like emotional in this way that felt potentially easy to fake. Like a lot of like, I'm really choking up now. I'm so upset. But like, we don't really see any tears, just to be clear. Just, can't 100%
putting
confirm
it out there
that there were tears. And she says that she's going to tell him. She's going to tell him why she needs to tell him. And she says, you know, I suffered from epilepsy from the age of like 12. And I would have these seizures. And it was just, imagine the worst pain, like pain more than anything you could ever imagine. That's what it was like. And my family couldn't afford treatment until I was an adult. And so I didn't get the medical care I needed and the medication I needed until I was 25. So when people complain about like having a cold or whatever, I'm just like, well, whatever. I've been through it. So whatever.
And so this sounds like a difficult experience.
Absolutely.
And also, it sounds like a really weird reason that you would feel nothing ever.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing to me about this is that it's kind of the inverse of the usual bachelor trauma dump, which is this horrible thing happened to me, and that is how I learned to be more empathetic and loving and caring. And then the bachelor is like, it's really incredible how strong you are, that this terrible experience made you a better person. And that is like an offering that they make that shows how much capacity they have for love and kindness through suffering. And I'm always like, what about people who go through great suffering that makes them selfish and bitter? We exist.
Look, we're
out there.
We found one,
and she admitted it. She was like, I went through great suffering and it made me a worse person. And that's my story.
And also, I think the abandonment of your family by your mother is basically the same as someone having a cold.
Yeah, when you complain about stuff that like doesn't matter, like losing your mother forever through her own choice to not see you anymore, it's like, whatever. Did you have seizures? I don't think so. So stop.
Also, as you pointed out, because it had been a while for me since I'd seen that initial conversation, I remembered that the vibes of the date, but I didn't remember that she had offhandedly been like, oh yeah, my sister is like this too.
Right. And it's like,
so you're like, well, did you both have this epilepsy origin story for the no feelings, or
is there something else happening here?
Yeah.
Also, I did go down a bit of a rabbit hole Googling, Joy, and she has discussed her experience of epilepsy in other places over the years. She wrote like a little narrative about it for an epilepsy foundation. She gave an interview about it when she was like a freshman in college to the school paper. And I noticed that in both places, she says that the seizures all fortunately happened while she was asleep. And what she tells Brandon is that she felt excruciating pain during the seizures. So that seems like a little different from being like, fortunately, yeah, I was asleep for the seizures, but sometimes I had to go to school with a headache the next day, which, to be clear, it sounds quite unpleasant, but I was like, it does seem like you're like tweaking this
turning
based
it
on
up
past
a little
accounts.
Bit.
Yeah.
And like maybe she experienced that pain in her sleep in a different form. I don't know. I don't know what the experience of having a seizure is.
It just seems strange that she would never mention it in a previous.
Correct.
It is like a rare but real thing that epileptic seizures can be quite physically painful. That's not a standard symptom from my reading, but she doesn't mention it in any of these other places. And also in her interview with the school paper, when she's a freshman, she says that it is now well controlled with medication. And I was like,
you're not 25 when you're a freshman in college.
So it does seem like maybe there was a little bit of massaging to make it seem a little bit more like her experience was like literally the worst thing anyone has ever.
Yes. I feel like what happened is that producers were like, Brandon's really going to need an explanation. You know, you put him off.
Yeah.
You really need to share some part of yourself to kind of like make him understand why you reacted that way. And so she just kind of played it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's
because the thing
odd.
Is, like, I don't think that you need to play up the experience. Like, having what she went through sounds
is awful.
Awful. And I really, you know, my heart does go out to her for that. What does need a little bit more accounting for that maybe she's trying to smooth over by playing up the details is the fact that that doesn't actually justify having no empathy towards anyone else forever.
Correct. And instead, but like Brandon has this like almost overactive empathy, and he also just clearly thinks Joy is like really fun and hot. And so he is desperate for a reason to keep her. So he just like fully just like starts weeping at this disclosure. And he's like, wow, this explains so much.
Yeah.
Maybe you're my wife. I'm like, well, but.
I would just encourage him to think about how it will feel in the future when he is going through something and she's weighing it on her scale next to epilepsy uncontrolled with medication for many years and it's found wanting. And she's going to be like, I feel nothing for you and I don't care for the rest of his life. Like, is that what he wants in a partner? Maybe it's something that she really just needs to work through on her own or in a therapeutic setting. But
I think she probably shouldn't like marry this man. That's
probably not.
My opinion.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, say that she is like a bad person or that she is incapable of being a good partner. But as someone who, like, if I were dating and the person I was dating told me that, I would be like, ooh, that seems like a red flag for me. I would want my partner to be prepared to find a way to express empathy and care toward me
right.
when I need it.
Also, because Brandon specifically says multiple times, like, that is actively one of, like, the most important things that
right.
I need.
And it turns out what he means is, like, I think that, like, bouncy barrel curls and lipstick and smiling are the most important things to me. And you
correct.
Fill all of those things so well.
It's so amazing. So they head off. Joy does not get sent home, and they head off to a group mixer in the exotic locale of St. Louis, and they just do a surprise ambush of all of the women with these men's families and friends.
They're like, meet my family in St. Louis. Ba-dum-tsh. No.
Meet Me in St. Louis is a great movie. We all know. Great reference.
I really actually did enjoy this part because, like many group portions of this show, it just feels like they've been invited to a rustic chic barn wedding.
Yes. It's so funny. They're just like, yeah, in this like wood forward venue.
Yeah.
There's little tables set up. Like you're really like, this is a wedding reception.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the rustic barn look. And they all walk in and there's like flower arrangements and there are different tables with calligraphy cards with the men's names on them. So you know which table is yours.
Yeah. And your table with the family is at your farmer's name.
Yeah. Obviously. This is the Mitchell themed table.
Yeah.
And yeah, surprise, all the families are there. So the women all walk in behind their husband, all the sister wives trailing behind on their way to the wedding. And what do you know? All the men's families are there. And so now they're going to be sort of spending what feels like a wedding reception, being interviewed by their boyfriends, like three sisters and parents, or best female friend and daughter.
Yeah, just a lot of moms probing 23-year-olds about when they are ready to have their wombs completely filled. And yeah. Hopefully it's right now in this moment or yesterday. I mean,
Nathan is 23. He doesn't have a lot of time to waste anymore. He's already just squandered like at least 5 years of his prime reproductive.
Yeah, they're years. Like, that sperm is going to curdle eventually.
It okay? will. Like, yeah, yeah, sooner than you would think. So he's got to get moving. So we start with Nathan and his family. He grew up in a family of three sisters, and he is the youngest. So he has three older sisters, and they are all there to weigh in. And they all want to know when they're going to be ready to have babies.
Luckily, all of these women just want to be young moms and stay at home. So, you know, these are the 23-year-old trad wife hopefuls that we are seeing populating our Instagram and TikTok feeds.
I mean, they 23-year-olds, aspire. Like, that's where you got to look right now for women who want to get pregnant and stay home, because that's the up and coming, like, hot new thing. So,
right.
Plus,
this is the trad wife generation.
Exactly. And it seems like Nathan, you know, has done a good job selecting for the women who share his goals. So good for them. We meet Brandon's dad, who, as you mentioned, is also very emotionally open. And it seems like a big theme with Brandon is that his farm is actually extremely remote. It's really in the middle of nowhere.
It's in Colorado, but it's like very far from.
Yeah, it's not like by Denver.
Right.
It's 2 hours from the nearest mall. And there are malls everywhere. You know, that's not even a major metropolitan area, just a mall 2 hours away. I would not be okay with that personally.
Same.
And it seems to me like the women are not considering this quite hard enough, like what that would be like. And I think that his family is, and friend Carlos are like, think about it. It's going to be big to like really not be close to anything.
They're like, are you going to be okay with this? And this is especially present for Joy, because she's like, you know, the thing that's going to be hardest for me is there's no makeup store nearby.
I'm like, where am I going to get my nails done? She holds up her manicure and she's like a very, like, always wearing like eyeliner, lipstick, everything. Very fully made up woman.
And you're like, no, genuinely, that like might be hard.
Yeah, to me, this was giving like Ashley Iaconetti being like, of course I want to move to Iowa with Chris Soules. And like, I just don't believe you. So what's going on? At least on The Bachelor, you get to be on The Bachelor and travel and have fun.
It's true. You're just like doing physical labor.
Yeah, I just don't buy that she is ready to move away from nail salons.
I don't think she's, and that's not like even a judgment, because like I too would not want to live 4 hours from all nail salons.
I absolutely, like, I'm constantly having conversations these days that are like, we could move there, but would I be able to walk to a place where I could buy a latte? I don't think so. So it's a no for me. So I don't judge.
Yeah.
But I think you got to be realistic about that. Emerson, who was a later arrival.
The new recruit.
Yeah. And someone who really takes seriously, I think, the idea of really living on a farm and being isolated. She's like, that's fine for me. I don't need to be around people and I'm not materialistic. No offense, Joy.
You know, I love when people say no offense, because it's so obvious that they're like, you should be taking offense. I assume you are taking offense, but like, no offense.
Right. It's like the one way that you can make it more pointed, because it already, and this is probably why she said no offense, it already felt pretty pointed after Joy made that joke to be like, I don't care about stuff like that. But then to specifically say no offense, Joy, just to draw further attention to the fact that Joy is the person who is materialistic. Perfect. I mean, yeah, I got the sense from this conversation that Emerson is maybe the only person who is capable of being in that position.
I agree. And I think that Brandon's family and friend, Carlos, feel the same way, but they're all like, but look at how he runs after those barrel curls so happily.
He's not combed out sausage curls.
He's clearly so into joy. And they're all just like, ugh, sigh.
It is kind of fascinating to me how that happened. I wonder if a big part of it is just that she very early on was in a position where he felt protective of her because Reba kind of went after her, which looks increasingly to me justified because I'm like, I am getting very fake vibes from Joy as the season goes on.
She made some real points and she just her delivery was the problem.
But Brandon is so like happy and eager to empathize with a hot woman and protect her that he quickly aligned himself mentally with Joy and was like, it's my job to look after her. So then after this happens, we see Joy get up from the table and retreat to the bar. And it seems maybe like she's left because she felt awkward or her feelings were hurt by Emerson, or maybe that was just the edit, but that's kind of how it's framed. And so Brandon, of course, has to go after her and check in on her. And she's like, what? I'm fine. No, absolutely. This is so nice. And he like is smiling and happy to be with her and like hug her. And his family is like, oh, she's the one he's really interested in. But I feel like a lot of it to me just seems like he's interested in feeling like he can
care for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His empathy muscle is getting a workout and he likes it.
And he likes that.
Emerson is a little more no nonsense. And like, what's he going to do with that?
And his third connection, Grace.
I keep forgetting about Grace.
I know.
She's the one I think I personally like the most, but she kind of fades. But
I think that she's the one that he wants to be friends with. I don't think he's the one that...
Isn't that always how it goes?
I don't think she's the one that he wants to make out with. Yeah, that is kind of how it always goes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Mitchell's family. Mitchell is our, like, most obviously an overt, like, MAGA one, I think.
Really?
To me. Yeah, he's the one who's had the most overt conversations about, like, yeah, so glad you're looking for a man of God and, like, a... real man.
Like, see, this is the problem that I did like lightly skip over the season, like I was skipping a stone across a pond. I haven't touched down on any of those conversations. Yeah, so that's interesting.
He's the one who's had the most of those, and I'm kind of like, I just get vibes from him.
Yeah,
and this was confirmed in the way that his family responds to his group of three women. At first, they are very impressed with Sydney, who I think is the most capable of doing farm life, frankly, because she has like a lot of practical skills. She installs septic tanks with her dad. Like she's like
loves it. She's like, I love installing septic tanks.
Yeah. She's also like 22 years old. So I'm like, and Mitchell's mom ends up pulling Sydney and Kate aside, and Mitchell's dad pulls Kiana, who's his third connection, aside. And Mitchell's mom just immediately sits his two, like, 22 and 23-year-old girlfriends down and is like, when will you be having babies for my son? And Sydney answers this very honestly, and she's like, she's 22.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, I'd want to, like, do some travel, enjoy marriage for a few years, and then start a family. His mother is not impressed by this. And immediately after, Kate is like, I wish I was already pregnant. I wish I already had 10 children, basically. Like,
yeah.
I just really want to have babies.
That's just what I want. I don't know. And this, I was riveted by this moment because when Kate says this, Sydney looks agitated. She has no poker face. She's sort of smiling at Kate. And then when Kate says she wants babies immediately, she stops smiling, loses her smile right away. She starts like twitch blinking rapidly and looking intensely back and forth between Kate and Mitchell's mom over and over again. In this way where you can clearly see her going through in her head, like, oh my God, Kate is saying something different from me. And Mitchell's mom seems to be responding really well to it. Oh my God, that's what I should have said. I should have said that because now Kate is the one that Mitchell's mom thinks is a better partner. Like you can just see her like unraveling inside. And after this, Mitchell's mom is like, Kate, I just want to say that I admire you so much for saying that. That's really amazing that you want to have babies right away.
This is just such intense trad wife core. Yeah. It's gotten so overt.
Yeah. Poor Sydney. Sydney's like, I found the one place where like my skill set really shines. Like I'm great with manual labor. I'm pretty traditional, you know, but I also can pull my weight on a farm, which like a lot of women on this show can't, you know, they didn't grow up doing this kind of work and they're a bit thrown off by it, but I have everything that a farmer's wife needs. This is my fate. This is my destiny. And it's all going down the drain because she doesn't want to have babies at 23.
It's so dark.
In her confessional, she's like, Mitchell's mom is probably pulling for Kate now. And I'm like, yeah, it was not subtle.
Like, yeah, correct. And then the family gets back together and Mitchell's mom is like, Kate is the one.
Yeah. You. But they all tell him different things. That was the funny thing. Her dad was like, his dad was like, oh, well, Kiana seems like really ready to give up what she has going on. She's like a dog trainer in LA. And she seems really flexible and like ready to start over here. So maybe she's a good option. And then, you know, Sydney, she's got all those skills. Like, I don't know. They all seem like great choices. And Mitchell's like, that was really unhelpful, everyone. Thank you so much. That didn't help at all, but I know it's really coming from an honest and good place. Thanks for fucking nothing.
Nothing. Oh, the vibes feel very different with Ty's family because his family is his best female friend, Micah, and his tween daughter, Lennon. They are not asking, shockingly, his suitors about their empty wombs.
Yeah, I can't imagine that Lennon is eager to have infant siblings. Kind of a distraction from her. She seems like definitely very attached to her dad in this way. Yeah, where
I think they're very close.
Yeah, early on, someone says something like, oh, well, Micah is, you know, Ty's best friend, so she really knows him better than anyone. And Lennon is like, hey, I'm right here. I know my dad better than anyone. And so they're more focused on just companionship. And they seem to really like both Melody and Megan. They're just a little worried that Melody will struggle with distance. She's from Yonkers. She loves New York. And, you know, will she struggle with being so far from home? I also thought the dynamic between Melody and Megan was interesting. Like, they definitely don't want to come off as petty or in conflict. So they're almost like constantly being like, well, she would be great for Ty in this way. Oh, who would be a really good fit for farm life? Megan would. Megan really understands farm life. Oh, well, thank you so much. But, you know, Melody, you're really game for anything and you held your own on the farm so well. So I think you would also do great.
I will say that Ty did weed out every woman who was like wanted to be in conflict with other women. And then his third connection self-eliminates because she doesn't want to have to quit her job caring for cancer patients.
And she was a late arrival. She had like just gotten there. And she's like, well, this was a mistake.
Like, she's like, but I think I'm going to lose my job if I don't go back. And like, since you're not sure, like I'm going to
honestly, maybe this is just me. And apologies to Ty, but I feel like he definitely strikes me as someone where you would see him and be like, he's a hot, middle-aged farmer. He's the whole package. He's going to be like my strong, silent, you know, farm love. And I would get there and just be like, I don't know, something about this is not working for me. Ty's kind of giving me the ick a little bit. I don't know. It's not working.
He looks like a Ken doll.
Like I feel like it's just like not adding up to what the face is promising for me.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean,
and I would be like, I need to go back to my cancer patients. I'm so sorry. Whoops.
Yeah, she's like, it's been a fun week. Gotta go. So the episode ends with the farmers selecting their final solo dates. Nathan picks his slow burn gal, Allie. Brandon chooses Joy. Mitchell picks Kiana, who is arguably his weakest connection, and Ty picks Melody. So next week, final solo dates, final nights on the farm. We are reaching the end of this season, and the stakes remain low because who cares?
And the stakes are low. They're very low.
Yeah, but I will still be watching. Now it's time for teaser time. Claire, what do we have on our docket? What are we going to be watching the rest of this week into next week?
Well, the new season of The Circle is coming out this week. It has its first drop of episodes April 17th. And yes, there will be an AI-generated player. Yes, we are waiting to see which presumably man, but hey, maybe it's a woman, will get seduced by an AI chatbot. And
I'm desperate. I'm desperate for this to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's all I want. I need a like pseudo sexy conversation to take place between a random hapless man and a robot.
I mean, based on the ads that I am seeing on Twitter these days, 50% of conversations on the internet are now between men and sexy female chatbots.
Yes.
At minimum.
So true.
Odds are high that that's going to happen. They can't resist.
You know. One can only hope. And now, our final roses. Claire, who are you giving your final rose to this week?
This week, my final rose goes to my top moment from this week, Joy's incredible reversed and remixed trauma dump to advance her relationship with Brandon. Just like I said before, it's so weirdly refreshing and also disturbing to see a woman on a dating show lay all her suffering out and be like, I have gone through so much and it made me a worse person. And I was like, yes, represent those of us who have been crabbed and embittered and made cynical by pain. We're real. We didn't all come out of it better. We deserve representation.
That's beautiful.
I love that they just went there. And I didn't know this show had this kind of moment in it, quite frankly. So I loved it.
I'm going to give my final rose this week to Jan Danielle, who not only has an incredible name, but also announced to the wider group during the premiere episode of Lovers and Liars that she just doesn't think the men are, quote, that smart.
She's just putting it out there. We love to see that.
And on that note, that is it for this episode of Love to See It with Emma and Claire.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Talon Stradley. Tatiana Kanis-Smith is our production assistant. Our theme music is by Tamar Haviv and our art is by Celine Chang.
If you like our show, please remember to follow us, rate us 5 stars, leave a review. You know, tell us what shows you're watching that you might want us to dip into or out of in this grab bag. And of course, spread the word about Love to See It to all of your friends, even your non-bachelor watching ones.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com.
You can also find us on TikTok at Love to See It Pod and Instagram at clareandemmapod. And you can find our newsletter, Rich Text, on Substack at clareandemma.substack.com. I'm also on social media at Emma Lady Rose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon. We'll be back on Thursday with a little Love 101 Bennifer edition. Can you keep up? I like love it.
Stitcher.
Radio Andy.
Hey, it's Andy Cohen. Join me on Andy Cohen Live, where it's just you, me, and some of the world's biggest celebrities.
Paris Hilton.
Chelsea Handler.
Seth Rogen.
I love you, Miley. Thank you so much.
You can listen to Andy Cohen Live at home or anywhere you are. No car required. Download the SiriusXM app for over 425 channels of ad-free music, sports, entertainment, and more. Subscribe now and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.